Okay, welcome everybody. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Do you want to hand those out?
30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 19, 20, 21, 22. We need to have some more printed up. Hello, you're in the class.
You want these to go out?
I'm teaching a class right now. You're on the phone. Who's... Oh, hi, Barry. I'll call you back. Okay, I'll... Bye. It's not for you guys.
Do you have the masters? Do I need to take a, keep a set of those?
These are the masters, right? Okay. You can take these and print them.
Okay, I'll go make another.
You need that too, though. Thank
make
you.
Another few seconds.
Okay, we got a short time, about a half hour, to master the guitar. So we're actually bringing in the Tacoma guys to give you a demonstration about guitar feedback and stuff like that. So... First things first. First is you don't need a guitar today because you're not going to play anything. In fact, if you do play anything, it's kind of going to slow everything down. So, mastering the guitar, it's not hard. You practice every day for a couple hours for 20, 30 years, and you won't have mastered it. You can't master the guitar. The guitar and music are a creative process. And it's a gift from God, and like him, he is into creation and infinity. So every time you get up past a plateau, you see a bigger plateau, and there's just that much more to learn. And I've been playing, I don't know, 30 years, and it's still that way. And it's amazing. I mean, I love it. I'm kind of a, when it comes to practicing, a very scientific guy. I really just dissect the instrument. But it just keeps going and going and going. So we're going to have a brief moment here off the subject. But this was so cool. A friend of mine, Gene Houck, is teaching the bass class. And he's got what he calls the 10 Commandments of Good Worship Bass Playing. But I think this applies to any instrument and, in particular, guitar. So, one, you shall play what the drummer plays. Two, you shall make every note count. Three, you shall play with dynamics. That's the answer, of course, is dynamics. What do you want? I'm playing as loud as I can. You shall trust the paper. You look at the chart and you trust that it's right. You shall listen and watch. Six, you shall be able to play different styles and techniques. You shall always try to play your best. You shall not forget to practice. You shall groove. It erases a multitude of sins. It erases a multitude of sins. You shall not forget to worship while you play. So what Brett and I were just doing, personally, I consider that worship. Now, it's not congregational, congregational. If you're taking a solo like that or playing an instrumental piece, you're definitely not creating a moment where people are going to be singing along or should. But I look at it as the pursuit of excellence at being a steward of a gift from God. God gave it to me. And I didn't always look at it this way. I did a lot of it to push myself forward, you know, in a prideful kind of way. But as I've grown, I see it as a gift from God. I am the steward of that gift, and I am to become as good as I possibly can by being diligent and practicing and so on and so forth. When it comes to music in general, but guitar specifically, there are three fundamental things that you're working with. One, melody. So you're going to be called upon... play melodies, single note stuff. Harmony. Chords. So every time. That's harmony. Rhythm, whether I'm playing or You've got time that you've got to deal with, different rhythms. All of these different components and how you apply them set the style that you're going to be playing. So when you play in different style music, if I'm... You know, that's one thing. As opposed to... So styles are usually dictated by rhythm and types of sounds. So those are other things that come together. All right, so when you come to this instrument, the guitar, you're always working with some aspect of harmony, rhythm, and melody. So you've got to get control of the instrument. How do you do that? Well, if you're going to work with chords, just as an example, if all you can play are first position chords like this, it pretty well tells you how you're going to play everything. If you want to break out from that, then you've got to find other ways of playing chords. The smallest chord that you can deal with is a triad. So if I take like a C chord like this and break it down to the smallest possibility, I'm going to come up with something like this. The notes are C, E, and G. If I want to have control of my instrument, I'm going to learn to play them in lots of different places. So what I do, you got six strings. I divide them into three sets, or is that right? No, I'm sorry. With the six strings, I come up with three sets. They are E, B, G, then B, G, D, make that four, and then so on and so forth. You get what I mean? I'm going to take the first three strings, E, B, and G, and I'm going to make triads, three-note chords. So as an example, that's my first chord. That's a C chord. Then I'm going to go up the neck on the same set of strings. That's also a C chord. Then I'm going to go up again. So these are different inversions of C chords. And then finally I repeat again. I'm going to come back down to my next set of strings. They're going to be D, G, and B, and play a C chord. E, G, C. So I learn things up and down the neck in these particular chords, and then I learn things across the neck. So I might start right in this position with triads. Okay, let's have a show of hands. Does everyone know what a major triad is? Okay. It's the simplest major chord you can play. It's made up of the first, the tonic, a third. In the case of C, it would be C, E, and G. To take what I just did and then convert that into minor, all you do is flat the third. So you take E, in this case, and flat it. So your chords go from like this to... So if you already know how to play the major ones, if you just go through and... So changing one note and you've got all of those. If you go back to your major and raise the fifth, now you have augmented triads. In these packets that are being handed out, you'll have all of this stuff in there. Okay, now we've learned triads. Now you have to learn how to apply them. And how you learn how to apply something is, first, you really have to know what the sound of it is. If somebody's playing that chord, I play that, particularly in worship, I'm not going to play much for very long. I won't be asked back. But if they're playing, and I know that's going to work, especially if I'm not playing across a singer. And those things that I just played there are mostly based off of little triadic things. Now, again, I know I'm tearing through this, so it's an overview that you would then take on yourself. Here's my gigantic tip of the day, cyberfret.com. Cyberfret.com is a great site. It'll show you almost everything you'd ever want to know about music theory, and it'll take you other places. And you can take a rank beginner, someone who's learning how to tune the guitar, memorize the names of the notes of the strings, and they could go all the way through CyberFret to some pretty advanced kind of things. Okay, so once you start learning triads, and then start learning what they sound like, then you can start applying them, using them different ways. And it could be as simple as, which it would be a totally effective thing on some worship tunes as an alternative to, that somebody else may already be playing. Okay. So you then take a triad and start using a chord like, let's say I'm playing an F chord. Now I'm going to put a G triad on top of that. Does that sound good to everyone out there? So it's a simple kind of thing that you can do. And I like to take and try pretty much anything. So I'm just going to take this little triad with this bass note. So I've gone from F to G over F to G flat over F, and now I'm back at F. That might be a very cool thing to do for the intro of a song or the ending of a song, that kind of thing. Again, the style of what you're doing will dictate whether that's cool or not. And if it's not cool, don't do it. You know, so if I want to play, what worship song was that? Yeah, no one knows. So forget that. You know, it's lounge worship. Okay. The other thing that you need to do in terms of moving over to melody is if basically you're playing lines and solos is like a pentatonic blues scale and everything you play is right here. How many people can play a pentatonic scale like I just played? Okay. Here's the first thing I would do. Basically, I found here's the lowest note of the pentatonic scale on my guitar, and I'm in that position. Here's the position we started with. Here's the next note up, so I move up to there. So my pentatonic scale is not this anymore. My pentatonic scale is, I I can go to any spot on the neck and play one, or I can stay on one string and play up and down one string, which I highly recommend. So I had a teacher that...
Who doesn't have one?
I had a teacher who used to talk about the unitar, and that is a guitar with one string. There's no technique. It's, you know, you don't have to worry about fingering. It's one string. So your ideas are really pure. And I highly recommend just experimenting with those kinds of things. So that's what to do with the pentatonic scale. Then learn other scales, a major scale. You take a major scale like that and do some form of organization up and down the neck. So you can play in that position, or and there are different methods of organizing it. There's one out called the cage system that's based off of these first position chords, C, A, G, E, D. So you take these chords, C, take the A version and play it as a C. So from here, you come up to here. Then the G version, which would be like this. Then E, and then D. So all those, now you have 5 points of reference, so you can play a scale. So now, if I think in a particular key, like C, it just lights up. Every note lights up.
Go ahead and play Amaze and C.
And just to let you guys know, I know that there's a lot of you that still don't have those sheets. Everyone is going through the same problems in the other classes, so they're copying like madmen in there.
And there is a $5 chart.
We'll do is Eric and I will make a bunch more, and then we'll put them out on the table out in the foyer. So if you didn't get one, you can get one after this, because it is a pretty large amount of material.
So for me, from doing this work, C is not this or this. C is everywhere. There isn't a spot. And there are things that naturally your body, just how your physical body wants to do things that will work better on one part of the neck than another. And it will find its own way. I remember I had played in a band on the West Coast, and I moved to the East Coast, and I came back 2 years later and played with this guy in this bass player. I was going, man, how did you learn what you're doing now? And I did something. It was like, I didn't even know I did it. And it just happened. It evolved in your own playing. So the more you know in this very technical way, your body just takes over, your brain and your body. The synapses are all in place, so when you hear a sound, it will go. Does that make sense to everybody? It makes no sense to anybody else. Okay, good. So, but this is something where it takes discipline and practice. And a metronome. The metronome. That's a drum machine, but it will do. There's some folks here. I do seminars here every month, and I have said this over and over, so I'll get some head nods. To drive this point home, I would have someone come in for a private lesson, and it's free here at the church, but outside it would be $25. And I'd say, come back in with a metronome next week. You can get one for $20. And we'll keep the lesson price at $25. If you come back without it, it's $600. Because that's how important it is. And if you don't like playing with a metronome, if you can't do it, become an usher. I am just as serious as I possibly can be, because you need to get over yourself, and the metronome will help you do that. It does not lie. And if you can't come to grips with it, you're in the wrong place. I guarantee it. And you will be the one who is responsible for train wreck after train wreck after train wreck. So get a drum machine or a metronome. Use it often. I use one every time I practice. You know, 30 years later, I still use it. There are cool things that you can do with them to develop your technique, to develop groove. And I, just as an example, for scales, I will start with a metronome. Now, obviously, I can play faster than that, but what we're trying to develop here is not speed. What we're trying to develop is precision. Precision is like athletes, an athletic thing. And you do it like karate, when they do these moves over and over. They do them incredibly slow at first and for a long, 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 long time. So I start... For this kind of thing, I am really trying to feel where that pick comes in contact, when, how far I'm letting it get away from the string, because I want it to be very, very consistent. Like, I want it to be as close to the string when I get done and ready to come back up. And I want a downstroke and an upstroke to sound as close as possible, as close as I can possibly make it. So, once you get control of the neck in this way, so you can play chords up and down the neck, scales, and so on and so forth, then you need to know how to apply the things. And you either get it so you've got a couple of stock licks, which is a great idea. So... whatever they are, that's a starting place. It's cooler if you can get control of it. So, so you know exactly what you're playing. You know, I wouldn't get up and sing. I don't know if I can actually do this, but. Lord, I lift your name on high. Love to sing your praises. You see what I mean? So far away from the melody, like I don't know the melody, because that's what I was trying to do. I've got to know what I'm doing. I can't play aimlessly. I have to know what it's going to sound like before I play it. And if you don't, you're playing out of control, and the train wreck is beginning already. So, ear training, listening to things. When you practice your scales, sing them. Once you learn a scale, do little things with it interval-wise so you get to know it more intimately. I have this thing called forward, backwards, forward, backwards, backwards, forwards. So everything I learn on a scale, I apply those things. So I'm playing a scale in thirds. Forward, backwards. Forward, backwards. Backwards, forwards. And I play it through every scale form. Here, 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 so on and so forth, okay? I might play it in fourths. Same thing, forward, then backwards. Then forward, backwards. Backwards, forwards. Fifths. So what I'm doing is I'm gaining agility and I'm training my ear. I'm learning what a jump from the tonic to a fifth is, or a sixth, or a seventh. Your ear training. If you then start to study harmony, you will learn that in a key like C, there's a set of chords that go along with it. I know I'm going through this stuff really fast, and again, we recognize there's no way to grasp the entire thing in one shot, but I want to give you a really strong overview. When you harmonize a major scale, you come up with the first chord is major, if you're doing triads. Second chord is minor. Third chord is minor. Fourth chord is major. Fifth chord is major, minor, and then diminished. And that's true for every major scale. So if I'm playing in C, let me just give me some. C works. Go to an A minor. Because I know that these chords belong to the key of C, even if he sits on A minor for the next 20 minutes, everything that I play in C will work. And if I actually know what I'm going to play before I play it, it might be musical. So you learn this one idea, and then you can apply it 100 different ways. Now, if we go back to that scale, C major, and we flat one note, now we have a minor scale. That gives us a whole other kind of harmony. This is definitely, this would be pretty far out worship, but so, and I'm deriving what I just played out of minor scales. So, you learn the C major, flat one note, E flat, E to E flat. Now you have a melodic minor scale. If you flat the sixth, now you have a harmonic minor scale. So once you've put in all this work learning the major scales, change one note, and boom. You've got all these minor scales. change another note, and you've got a whole other set of minor scales. Okay, so now we're expanding our knowledge base. Okay, there are a few other things I want to talk about. We're talking about scales, chords, so on and so forth, ear training. Distance between one note and another is called an interval. And it's really a great thing to learn. Most of us know what a third sounds like. So if I play that scale in thirds, that makes sense to most of us. A minor third. A fourth. That starts to get a little bit more nebulous. You might like the second one. That's a fourth. The third one's a fifth. I went to a music school, and they'd actually make up games, and we'd learn these things that way. You'd remember that way, a sixth. NBC used to have this theme that went da 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 da. That's a sixth. And so on and so forth. You memorize the sound of things, get together with somebody and play games and do that kind of thing, and it'll expand your ability to play and to respond to people around you playing different things. Reading music. How many people can read music? That's incredible. How many people can't read music? Okay. I just challenge you to do it. You know, I'm trying to imagine if I couldn't read the Bible, if I couldn't read English or any other language for that matter. It's not that hard. It takes, you know, it's like anything else, you have to pour some effort and some discipline into it. It opens you up in so many different ways. I mean, I promise you, if you do it, you will never regret it. Because you'll look back and you'll go, you know, the work I put in learning what that dot means really helped me to understand. What those sounds are. Or you look one day, and I learned later in life, you know, I wasn't like a kid who learned it. I was in my 20s when I started. And it was not cool. It was hard initially. But once you get over the initial inertia, it really starts to come. You look at a rhythm phrase, you understand what it is just by looking at it. You're trying to learn a vocal part and a rhythm part. This happens to me pretty regularly. I started singing late in life, and so it's hard for me to play and sing at the same time. So sometimes I will write out the part. This is my rhythm part. Against, open the eyes of my heart, Lord. I don't know about you guys, I find that almost impossible to do. So I write it out. Get my metronome and play it really slowly and build it up. So those are tools that you can put together in that way that will really help as far as that goes. Styles of music. Again, everything that I'm saying, aside from the fact that there are strings and so on and so forth, you can apply to musicianship. And there are different factors that are involved in specifying a style of music. So if it's that kind of chord, that kind of harmony, these two chords, these sus chords, they're used in worship a lot, as opposed to lounge worship, which we won't do. They're great to know, but you're not going to use them often. So, but these things dictate style, what kind of harmony is, what kind of rhythm is being played. You know, if I'm playing Chances are pretty solid that later in that tune, I'm not going to be going. Not in this church. Maybe on a different song, but not on that song. So I would learn as many styles. I mean, first learn the ones you need to know for the church you're in. But if you want to continue to grow, look at other styles of music. See. Reggae, what's going on there? Country stuff, what's going on? As a guitar player, there's a whole plethora of sounds that you can go and check out using different effects. That's a whole other class. So, let's see. Ah, this is another thing that I think is really, really, really smart. When you're looking at having a library of chords that you can play, most of us kind of, we learn the ones that we need to know to play the songs that we have to play. And at first, that's because a friend of ours knows how to play that song, and they teach us those chords, and that's all we know. Then maybe we buy some sheet music, and we learn from there. Or we meet some more friends, and they know other songs. Or some of us have taken Brett's class on taking things off records, and so we start doing that. To do that in a more effective way, think about this idea. Let's say you know how to play a G chord, okay? See if you can have chords that are based off the low E string, so the roots are here, off of the A string, so the root is off of A, and then also off of the D string. You start getting higher than that, and you end up with three strings, two strings. But so if you need to play a minor chord, you can play using the A as a root. And there are lots of possible variations. I would find as many as possible. Off of the A string here. Off of the D string. So, majors, minors. Start off with, okay, what are the chords that I need to know how to play? And start with those so that if you have to play a sus2 chord, you've got one with the root here, or you've got one with the root here, or if you've got one. So, because that will immediately expand where you can play things. And if you have more instruments playing chords, you have the potential for more people stacked up in each other's way. So, okay, Brad, it's all yours.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's just do that. Let's bring our...
Steve Armstrong? Is he in the house?
Yeah, come on up, Steve.
Okay. So that is an overview of the guitar, right? And again, I know we just crammed a whole universe of stuff out there. A lot of it is in the paperwork that you may or may not have, but can have. And it's all out there on with a good teacher or at CyberFret. And lots of other areas. This is Steve Armstrong. Steve is here from Tacoma Guitars, and he's a great guy and really happy to have him here. And before we made the whole deal to have Tacoma here, we talked about a concept, and the concept is, since most of us are acoustic guitar players involved in worship, at least at the fundamental level, feedback in acoustic guitars, and Steve's going to address that issue, and he's brought a few instruments here.
Yeah.
Do you want to get one plugged in now?
Why don't I start, and you go ahead and do it. Okay. Frankly, I'm not sure I'm going to use it, but go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity. You guys just had a tremendous amount of experience and ideas. I wrote some thoughts down while Eric was talking. So I'm going to ask you some questions. I'm going to assume that everybody here is already a guitar player, but how many of you are guitar players that are leading worship with the guitar in your hand? Hold them up high. I want to really get a percentage. Okay. How many of you are, in leading that worship, how many of you are holding practices for the worship team on a weekly basis, regular basis? Oh, interesting. Quite a few. Most of the ones that are leading. How many of you are playing guitar in the ensemble but not leading worship? I guess that would be the rest of them. Okay. I played my last professional gig over 20 years ago. But since that time, I've been involved in the professional audio industry and spent a whole bunch of time with JBL down in Los Angeles. And it's really fascinating to talk about guitars. I sell guitars, but I'm a multi-line rep. And the right brain, left brain, which is the creative side, the right brain? Is that right? I'm left-handed, so I think it's the right brain side. The creative side versus the very sort of cut and dry black and white issues that your sound man back there faces 100 feet away on a snake. That's the other question I wanted to ask. How many of you sing and worship in a church where there is a sound system at the other end of the building? Most everybody. Okay, good, good. So Eric just gave you a wealth of information. I'm going to reinforce a couple things that he said. Practice equals focus equals playing what you hear. I submit to you that no matter what style of music you're playing, playing what you hear is the goal of being a musician, okay? And the focus that comes from practice, his metronome trick, is in fact focus. And the goal of that is getting to be able to play what's in your head. Frankly, I stopped playing because I couldn't get myself to the point where I could play what I heard in my head for the style that I was playing. And I worked at it for many, many years and utilized that talent that God gave me. But I got to the point personally where I said, you know, that's as good as it's going to get for me, and I'm going to move on, and I'm going to take those creative energies and put them somewhere else. Okay, and we're going to talk about some of that in a minute. Practice equals focus equals playing what you hear was one of the points Eric made. The other one is about, I loved your body language when you said reading music. Did you see the little tilt of his head?
You know the old joke?
What's that?
How do you get a guitar player to shut up?
Put a piece of music in front of him, yeah. That little tilt, you know, that little body language that said, I'm wagging my finger at you in Christian love here. Learn how to read music. I'm going to add the corollary to that that comes into my audio background. I really believe that if you memorize the music that's in front of you, you will be a better player and your worship team will be a better worship team. I can't tell you how much that is important. We love our Manhasset stands. Our Manhasset stands are security blankets for us. And a lot of times when I'm in churches doing audio, sound systems and monitor systems, et cetera, I look at those stands, and some of the times all I see on those stands are, could you take a little bit of the sibilance out of my voice, please? See, it's the audio ears. Thank you. Sometimes what's on the stand is nothing more than the worship schedule, right? Well, you know what rock and roll bands, they take those worship schedules with the big Sharpie and they write them and they place them on the monitor wedge, right? Big, huge type. Get rid of the stand if you can memorize your music. Music is a creative function that involves learning to listen to the person next to you. We mostly talk about this with bass players and drummers. Learning that the function of those two instruments is that kick and groove of the lower part, the rhythm. But it works with guitar players and keyboard players and vocalists too. So Eric said, learn to read music. I'm going to add to that, learn to memorize music as much as you possibly can. Certainly for the stock worship songs, Lord, I Lift Your Name on High and that whole genre, I think it's a wonderful idea to get rid of the music stand. Any questions about that? Any? Okay. And I have time, Eric? Five minutes, 10 minutes, something like that? Okay. I've talked to most of you, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on the four models of Tacoma guitars we brought and the reason we picked those four models. I have the handout here, and it's back at the desk, that simply says that a guitar used for worship under the conditions of a live monitor, likely open chords, and competing volume levels on the stage, the smaller the body you use, the better the chance you have of less problems in that system, okay? That's the premise of how Tacoma is trying to add value to this worship conference. Now, again, I'm not going to dwell on that significantly here because I've already talked to so many of you, but I'm going to talk a little bit about what a system is, okay? If you change your guitar strings, old strings, new strings, you've changed the system. If you change the gauge of those guitar strings, you've changed the system. If you change the pick you use, you've changed the system. If you play for 9 months in a row, eight hours a day, and you play so much that you shave your calluses with a razor blade, there's guys that do that, okay? And then all of a sudden you take 3 months off and go to Hawaii, and you come back and you play, you've changed the system, okay? Life is a system, if you're beginning to get this point. And so in the interface between how you feel about the way you sound on stage and how you relate that to the sound man, this is where I'd like to take the next few minutes. Is that all right? Good. Okay. Was he going to say no? First law of physics says that every action has a reaction. Okay, so that's the point I'm making about what you do as a guitar player and how you interrelate with the rhythm section on stage and the audio, folks. How many of you are paid worship staff at your churches? Okay, just a couple. In either of those cases, do you also have paid technical staff that works? No. Okay. All right. The issue here is this, that how you hear on stage, even with a monitor, is different than the way the sound man hears in the cubic volume of the room, okay? Thrust stages like this that are wide act much differently than what's called a stage house. Any of you play in a stage house? Yeah, okay. Are the walls padded at all, or are they? Yeah, okay. The issues here are significant, and what we're trying to get to is the fact that the combination of the monitor system and the instrument you're playing makes you comfortable and more creative as a player, right? And accomplishes what goes on in the house, in the front of house. Now, I attended church here a couple weeks ago and heard Eric, and I was in the back, which puts me the better part of 150 feet away. And so what I did was I watched Eric play. And I listened to what Eric played, and I found that there was 100% degree of correlation between what he played and what I heard. And I said, that's the test of a good audio system being run properly. Okay? That I watched him play. Being a player, I can visually look at that. And then I heard what he played, and it was in sync. Now, why in the world am I going down this road? Because I'll bet you if I ask you, there'd be a fair percentage of you that sometimes have the picture of the volunteer sound man on your dartboard. Anybody do that ever? Risky thing to say, but I knew it'd get a laugh. So what I'd like to spend just a couple minutes on is saying, loving the sound man, the volunteer sound man, okay? Find out if he's a guitar player, he or she a guitar player. Find out if they actually play the instrument. If the answer is no, invite them to the stage on a regular basis and put them in front of your sound, unamplified and amplified, I'm assuming a monitor system here, and work with them. Have them, show them the love. Have them listen to how the instrument sounds unamplified, the raw guitar versus how it sounds amplified. What would we want the amplified sound to be like? Ideally, we'd like it to be just like the unamplified sound, only louder, right? Assuming we have the tools to do that in the monitor system, that's a worthy goal. Now, if you do those two things, then you owe it to him to go out there, maybe on a Sunday when you're not working, and learn his craft. And, for example, if you're playing a big-bodied guitar, a jumbo or a dreadnought, you may look at the EQ on the console, and you may find that he's cutting the sweet low end out of your guitar. You know, the very thing you like about that instrument may be gone. Why is that? The reason that is that our ears hear in three dimensions. I'm aware, for example, that this is, approximately 500,000 cubic feet of air, okay? And that because our ears hear in three dimension, we are no longer, this relationship about ears to guitar, is gone. How our guitar sounds in the bedroom is different than how it sounds in 500,000 cubic feet of air, or how we're going to perceive it, right? The guitar hasn't changed. It's the way we're going to perceive it. Okay, everybody down with this? Okay. So what that sound man has to do to bring that guitar out of the mix very well may be cutting some of the sweet low end and taking something in the upper mids and, I'm not even going to tell you the frequency that I've found useful because it doesn't work in every room, but taking something and boosting it. And if you take the headphones, and you hit the solo button in the headphones, you go, that's not my guitar, or that's not the guitar that I know that sounds like on stage. What I'm saying to you is that now we're into the issues of how acoustical bodies relate to acoustical spaces. Anybody faced these things before? Yeah, okay, pretty easy. And it is the body of Christ. It's all about maintaining peace and finding peace. And I think that if you invite him to the stage and you do the same for him in the sound booth, we improve worship. And I think that that's the theme of the concert or the conference. Any questions? Eric, thanks very much.
Okay, we've got about 5 more minutes. So we can have question and answers, and we can do it this way with the microphone, or you can come up here and I can grab a guitar and show you some stuff if that works for you. So any questions? Any? I always love this moment where, yes. I always try to find someone who knows more than I do. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I've moved a lot in my life, and whenever I'd get to a town, I'd always try to seek out somebody. If you can get out and hear them play, it gives you some indication. A good player is not always a good teacher, but often they are. So you can use that as a starting place. You can ask a good player. They will tell you. You know, they may know somebody who is. And I think it gives you a starting place. Ultimately, you have to try them and decide whether they've got the stuff to deliver to you. How many people are worship leaders? Okay. Here's a piece of advice you may have already done, but in terms of building worship teams, that kind of stuff, find out who the good teachers are. Call the music stores in your neighborhood. Find out who can teach piano. Find out who teaches bass. Find out who teaches drums. In terms of what your needs are, find those teachers so that when someone calls, I'll teach here at this church, but often I get a call from somebody who's looking for a teacher for their 10-year-old. And that's too young for it to end up being a worship situation, but it's really cool to be able to say, you know, George over at such and such music would be great for your child, or so and so would be great for you with your young drummer, and build a relationship with those teachers so that, you know, They know that you're feeding people over to them. It's part of a church experience. Obviously, if they're Christian, even better. So, any other questions? The question is, advice controlling feedback with an acoustic guitar? A couple of different things. Steve started off talking about the size of a body. If you have a chance, the smaller the body in the beginning, the less feedback you're going to have. I've got a good friend here who makes guitars. He's terrific, wonderful acoustic guitars, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. So I asked him, and he reached over, and he had an acoustic guitar that he said this was a mistake. So he cut the entire body off. So you look at it from the front, it looks like a guitar. You look at the back, it's solid. It's that thick. It's not acoustic anymore. And he's got a bridge pickup. I think he was using a B band. There's no feedback. If you have an acoustic guitar, a big body, lots of bass, that's your first problem. If you take that same guitar and put a blender system into it, so you've got a mic inside the sound hole, you just complicated the problem. Whenever I see guys, especially in big systems, big stages, and they've got those blenders, 98% of the time that mic is turned off. So that's not to say it's not a cool thing in a small setting, but the reality is here, it's going to cause problems. So I've got a great, I mean, I think it's just a terrific acoustic guitar that is not particularly good on this stage. So I'm going to hunt out an instrument that can live in this environment and give us what we need. So more recently, the other day I was playing with a new electric guitar from a company called Line 6. And these are computer-generated models of other guitars. And it's really amazing. And one of them is an acoustic guitar, so no feedback. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Physical placement of a monitor to an acoustic guitar not being more idle.
Yeah.
Same geometry. And move that monitor around an inch here, an inch there, and sometimes it also.
Yeah, it's a whole system. The room's part of the system, so where it is. You know, there are resonant frequencies in the room, on the stage. So, there's lots of stuff going on. Yeah, Steve? I think it helps. I know we used to do it with arch tops. With arch tops, we used to do everything. We'd tape the F-holes. We'd stuff them with foam. Of course, oh, wait, it's not acoustic anymore. You know. Yeah, fill the guitar with foam. Put duct tape over the top of the hole. And you're there. Yeah. 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 Absolutely. And I think that what you're describing, Steve, did everyone hear that? No? He's talking about, you know, if let's just say I'm the sound guy, and we have a guest guitarist here, and he comes in with a great Taylor instrument or Tacoma instrument, and it's a nice size body with a blender pickup system, so he's got a mic up in it, and you know, this cat is attached to this sound. You know, this is really significant and important to him, and anything that you want to do to change that, you're messing with him. You know, this is part of me. You know, you just said you don't like my shoes or something, so you want to do the least obtrusive, most non-offensive thing to try to correct things. Maybe if you can get him to put one of those sound hole covers in, it will be enough to get you through the situation. I can almost guarantee he is not going to want to turn off that microphone. But it's the first thing that should be done. So that's more in a sensitivity to a particular situation and getting through the situation. If it's a set group of people that you're dealing with all the time. It's relationship. It's a relational thing. And you do what Steve talked about, which were great suggestions. Bring the sound guy up. Let him hear your guitar. Let him hear what you're trying to get. Go and hear what he hears or she. And, you know, now you're developing a rapport, and you're both going after the same goals, and you're included. You value each other. Any other questions? Okay. Well, that's it. Thanks for being here for this particular event. If you did not get any papers, we'll make sure they're out there so that people can get them later on. Okay? Great.